I just want to point out that that last voter means that the mainstream media made her like Trump more. She's not saying the mainstream media like was against him. It was the mainstream media was for him. Wild. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. And this week, we're taking a break from the zillion primaries that we've been covering on this show. And we are surveying the national political landscape as we head into the summer and all of these primaries get resolved. In the last few weeks, we have seen the war in Iran drag on and the federal government start a slush fund for their political allies, who they say have had their lives ruined by the federal government. Although it looks like in brand new reporting that just came out before we started taping, the weaponization fund may be off the table. So you will know that when this airs. But meanwhile, how does the rest of the country think things are going? And what do people wish the administration was focused on? My guest today is someone I'm going to be checking in with more and more as we get closer to Election Day. Amy Walter, publisher and editor-in-chief of the Cook Political Report and my favorite nerd friend. Amy, thanks for coming back.
Thanks, nerd.
Yeah.
Right back at you.
Do you know what? I wear it with pride.
I do, too. I'm going to push up my glasses.
Yeah. Do I want to sit amid reams of crosstabs? Mm-hmm. I do. Because I'll tell you, the state of things is looking bleak. Although before we get into listening to voters, and I promise I won't, sometimes we and me in general can talk for a very long time before we get to voters. And I'm trying to get to voters faster. But, you know, I spent the weekend fighting on the internet about Graham Plattner and James Talrico because everybody's doing that. I know I gotta get this habit under control. But as you look around the country, right, lots of people are focused on Maine. So you're wearing your Colby shirt. In honor of Maine being at the center of the
being
political
the center
discourse.
Of the universe. It's never been at the center of the political universe. Actually, it used to. Remember in the long, long, long ago days, as Maine goes, so goes the nation, because they voted earliest. Mm. They voted early before the November
election. I don't remember this.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't because we weren't alive. But and so that's where the saying came from. They were the bellwether. The fact that the Senate race has taken outsized attention is quite something, not what we're used to.
Once again, I've gotten nowhere close to starting the actual voters.
But because they didn't talk about that. But they talked about a lot of things there. These are people who you understand now how challenging it is as just listening to this group. You can appreciate how challenging it is as a candidate to try to win over these voters who believe everything is rigged. The media is rigged. The government's rigged. The system is rigged. Nobody's on the up and up. Everybody's on the take. And they don't believe anything, right? It's like they are voting for the least worst choice. I think one of the voters said that. And I think she said, doesn't everybody do that, right? That's how you vote. You just pick the least worst candidate. You don't pick someone you like because there's no such thing. And I wouldn't say these folks were nihilists, but because a couple of them were like, oh, my life is actually going pretty well. I just think that the country is not doing great. But they just do not believe that this system is at all worth celebrating.
Let's get into it. So just to be clear, these are Biden to Trump voters, our favorite cohort of swingy voters, to be able to sort of rock with. We're also going to listen to some Trump disapprovers later on, but they are distinct, different groups that we brought together. So one was actually screened for the fact that they rate Trump as doing a bad job. And then the other group is just your garden variety swing voter, Biden to Trump voter. So we're going to start there. We just did this group, and we, like every group, we start with the same question. How do you think things are going in the country? And you learn more from this question than you do any other question in the group. So let's listen to how they answered it.
I don't see Donald Trump coming into his second term as a leader. I just feel like everything had to be turned upside down when he came in. Instead of being more specific and goal-oriented, especially when it comes to foreign policy, economic policy, he hit on the issues of trans issues, but that's not the whole fabric of America. We have bills to pay. We have healthcare to think about, college to think about for our kids. So I think when politicians play on those social hot button issues and they can get into office, there has to be like a blueprint for the United States.
I think we've done a 180 from when Joe Biden was there with the boys and girls sports and the trans. And I think it's a lot better now kind of environment than it was before. I'm loving the kind of the American spirit that we have nowadays versus we didn't have that since 9/11 that I've seen. So we're in the right direction, slowly moving upward.
I think things are not going well at all. I think that the economy is basically is in shambles and it's going to get a lot worse. Everything that's going on with this war that we cannot win. I mean, like somebody said about the media, you can't trust anything coming out of the media right now. We basically trust zero because it just changes. It changes by the minute and it changes by the source that you're getting.
In regards to my own life, things are great. I look at things kind of more like a chessboard. You know, I mean, right now there is a lot of chaos, but there's been a lot of chaos for the last 10 plus years and it's only gotten worse. But I think that sometimes you just need to allow things to play their hand.
I think it's pretty messy. I think we're lied to a lot. I think it just, a lot of people go straight to like social media for their news. And I feel like the White House page specifically is breadcrumbing people to believe all this stuff and distract us from the actual issues. And I think it's all finally coming to light, hopefully. And I hope that we get some justice for everything. But I never really liked Trump and like how he speaks to people, how he treats people. And then this last election, I don't know. I just, like I said, I kind of just got sucked into mainstream media and they like to pick sides. And I was listening to his points of view and it kind of sucked me into him. And then now I'm definitely regretting it for sure.
So I just want to point out that that last voter means that the mainstream media made her like Trump more. She's not saying the mainstream media like was against him. Is the mainstream media was for him. Wild.
The breadcrumb piece, which I had never heard that term before.
You haven't? Yeah, it's the younger people.
What does it
use
mean?
It's a dating thing.
Oh.
Somebody explained this to me once, like a younger person explained it to me, but it is a like if you're texting with someone you like text them, but then you don't text for a little while and then you text again. I remember when they told me about this, I was like, you mean playing hard to get?
That's like, what it seems to me.
I was like, you guys didn't invent this.
Flirting, right? Like, oh, you invented flirting, young people. Yeah, wow, look at you.
Every new generation thinks they invented sex and dating. so I remember that was one of the first time I had heard it. I think what she means, though, is gaslighting.
That's what I actually think, too. When she went through it, it was more like, you know, Epstein files and all this other stuff trying to distract us from, right.
But what was interesting is that somehow she knew the White House was constantly putting this stuff out. And look, increasingly, I've been writing about this for a long time, and obviously people understand this now, but the extent to which people are getting most of their news, this is why it was funny when someone said mainstream media, and I was like, I wish we drilled down and ask what she means by mainstream media, because she probably means like Joe Rogan and not ABC News. Somehow this person is, whether it's on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, sees what the White House is putting out and is like, this is nuts. So really dismal marks from these swing voters, many of whom feel just very betrayed. And look, I do a lot of these groups. This is a very consistent thread, which is mainly a version of, I wanted him to focus on the things that mattered to my material well-being, and he's not. And I'm upset about it. And I feel like things are chaotic and, you know, their frustrations. People didn't bring up tariffs in this one, but a lot of them brought up the war in Iran because that is the thing that they feel like is driving up prices right now.
I mean, I feel like with this group, as well as another group with, these were Hispanic men who had voted for Trump. And, you know, the war comes up without you having to ask about it.
That's right.
In two ways. This is what I think is also interesting. We tend to keep coming back to, well, it's about gas prices and gas so expensive. And this is, but what they're all, this group especially really homed in on was like, we can't win this war. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Right. Like, we can love our military and we're awesome and America's awesome and all of that. But this is an unwinnable position that we're in. So what are we doing here? And how are we ever going to get out of this? And I think that too, so it's like a double-edged problem for the administration, because it's not like just a simple issue of, oh, this is increasing gas prices. It's also, this was really bad decision-making. And I don't think this is anything that we can succeed in. There isn't the measure of success cannot be met.
Yeah. I also just think that the Iran war, sort of much like the tariffs, sort of struck at the heart of Donald Trump as being sort of good for the economy. I think the war strikes at another central thing, which is that he's a great deal maker. And the fact that he can't seem to get us out of this or strike a deal, and it keeps dragging on, like, they were very aware. And we're going to get to the Iran sound, so I shouldn't preempt it. But they were very aware that it keeps being like, we're going to get a deal, and then there's no deal. And so, like, they were following that. Okay, but before we get to that, like I said, we had some groups that we've done that are Trump disapprovers, so people who voted for him but rate him as doing a somewhat or very bad job. And I want to play for you how they thought things were going in the country.
My main concern is the wars. War with Iran and everything. And I think it's very saddening because, in my opinion, I think actually there's conspiracy theories here and there. But I think that, you know, realistically, Israel controls President Trump and a lot of the decisions that are made for Americans. And I think that's a hard reality that people are slowly coming to realize. It's hard to gauge him. But honestly, in my opinion, I used to be a fan of Trump. I'm not anymore, because of the things that have happened since end of last year, early January. But I mean, I still wouldn't have Kamala Harris.
My brain is literally spinning with so much, but not in favor of the way things are going. It's a little bit of what every other woman has expressed. I think that he sold us a bag of, I'm not going to curse, but I do not like the way things are going, even with ICE. And border control for me was a very big thing. That was one of my biggest concerns with this election, was cleaning up the country and getting these dangerous illegals out. But I don't like how innocent people, professionals, have been incarcerated or taken.
I feel a lot of us are really struggling, and we're really looking toward our leaders for help. I don't think he's helping the people that need help right now. He's helping his friends, the rich ones.
Unless you are like a millionaire, just like regular everyday things that used to be very common are like near impossible to do, whether it be outings or just going to get something to eat, groceries. Like, I grocery shop every week. So like, I know when prices are going down and up, and like, I'm like, he's lying. Like, nothing has changed. Okay, maybe the eggs like have gone down, but like, that's it. I've never paid $9 for ground beef before, ever, even the good kind. So that is really, really crazy and getting very scary. And it's just like, I really thought that it was going to be about us here at home. He made me feel like he empathized with the plight of what was going on with Americans and, middle class and like below. But it just kind of feels like it's been involved in other countries and big corporations and all that since the beginning, and not really focusing on us here at home and like real everyday issues.
I've voted for President Trump, and I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt on a lot of things, but the communication has been beyond poor. It's been outright antagonistic at times. It's caused so much division in the country. It's ridiculous, and it doesn't even have to be there.
I mean, inflation's high. It's supposed to help bring it down. It's, I think, worse now than it was when Biden was president, with the gas going up real high and stuff. And plus, they talked about maybe giving a stimulus payment to help from inflation. And I don't think that's ever even going to happen.
I read something interesting yesterday about people were complaining about gas prices, and they asked, you know, why is it so expensive in the U.S. if we're not dependent upon the oil from Iran, even though the other countries are? And essentially they were saying that, you know, like BP and all these big corporations are just selling it over there because, of course, they can make gazillions of dollars over there selling it instead of keeping prices low for the American people. And I think that really shows like what's really happening here is it's these big corporations and things are benefiting and we're suffering because of it. And I'm all for capitalism. I don't want communism and socialism. I don't want what the left wants. I don't want what the Democrats want. But I feel like, you know, when the American people are in these situations, then you know, it's just we've gone off the rails.
Since you listen to other focus groups, would you say this through line? Because I just think it's really consistent in the stuff I'm hearing. These are not the swing voters. These are just Trump voters. But they disapprove of what he's doing. And it's almost entirely because of these economic things. And you heard people say it in there, like he was supposed to, the America first thing was meant he was going to take care of us. Yep. And he's not. Yep. Is that consistent with the kind of stuff you're hearing?
It is definitely consistent with what I'm hearing and what we're seeing in some of these other polls, right? I know there are pollsters who now break out their Republican samples into MAGA aligned and non-MAGA aligned. And again, these the non-MAGA aligned are not anti-Trump. Okay. These are people who voted for Donald Trump, but do not define their entire identity as a voter around him. And the numbers on Iran, on inflation, on all these issues that they just talked about are so much lower than those who identify as MAGA. So this numbers meaning Trump's approval rating on all of those issues. And so the rift within the Republican Party, I say to people all the time, Trump is not losing the MAGA base. The MAGA base is 100% with him, and they will always be with him. It's the other people who voted for Donald Trump, who did not wear a MAGA hat, who didn't show up at rallies, but also didn't want to vote for Kamala Harris, don't want to vote for Democrats right now, but they also don't see much of a reason why they should show up this year. I mean, I think that's fundamentally the challenge for Republicans in the midterm is that the MAGA base, like what percent of the Republican base is MAGA? Is it 55? I don't know. But let's just call it 60-40 MAGA, non-MAGA. And if 40% of your base is saying, you know, you didn't really deliver on the things I thought you were going to deliver on. I still think Democrats are crazy and socialists and all of that. So, you know, I'm going to sit this one out.
Yes.
That is a problem. They don't, it would be better for Democrats if they said, and I'm going to vote for Democrat because that's like a twofer. But even if they stay home, that puts a lot of what should be traditionally safe Republican seats in play.
You know, over there at Cook, you guys are really good at, you know, thinking about how if the blue wave crashes big, you know, mediums, like what is that net in seats, especially after everything that's happened with redistricting, which really put some seats back in Republicans' hands. Although, you know, you look at a place like Texas and you look at some of the places that they did the gerrymandering in and you're like, I don't know, that blue wave is big enough. They might still lose those seats. Do you guys have a sense right now of where it stands,
where we put things, you know, based on now that redistricting, it looks pretty much done. If the Alabama map ends up passing scrutiny, 205 Democratic seats will be start off as of today. Democrats are favored. You need 218 seats, of course, to be in the majority. There are 18 toss-up races. So they'd need to win 75% of the closest races, the ones that we think are 50-50, to get a bare majority. So on its face, you think, wow, 75%, that's kind of high. Rewind for a minute, Sarah. Before the Supreme Court decision in Virginia and the U.S. Supreme Court decision on voting rights, Democrats had 270 17 seats in that safer category.
Ooh.
Right?
Ooh, that's a big change.
They went from 1% needing to win for majority to 75%. That's a big change. The fundamental question to your bigger picture question of like, how big can the wave get? If we just assume it goes in the ways that traditional waves go, which is seats that today are sitting in the sort of lean Republican area, but are going to, by the time we hit October, are going to shift over to toss up. You know, you're getting then into a situation where a net of 15 or 16 seats, right, would be, I don't know if that's the ceiling of where they can hit, but I think we did move the ceiling for Democrats down a bit from, say, the high 20s or mid 20s down to more like 15 or so. The big, big, big million, jillion dollar question is how many districts that Trump won by more than 10 points could be at risk.
Yeah.
And the wave has to get pretty big because we just don't normally see most of the seats that go in a wave year are those seats that the president either lost election before or he won by less than five. There are hardly any of those. The next tier would be one with less than 10. There are about two dozen of those. So even if Democrats were to win every seat that Trump either lost or won by less than 10, that's 24 seats.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is, again, it's a win. They will win the House, but it is the idea of being, you know, 40, 50 seat pickup that is not likely.
That is dismal math. I mean, that redistricting, I mean, I've known this, but it when you put it like that, it just sort of reanimates for me
right.
How much of a power play that was for them and how it ultimately, with that Virginia decision and and the Supreme Court decision, like, man,
it really did help. And so what I would say, the short answer is it lowered the ceiling of gains for Democrats. There are still, though, for Republicans, too many vulnerable seats out there that Trump carried by less than 10. And remember, the seats that look vulnerable today for Democrats look less vulnerable as well, because the environment is going to lift, doesn't lift all boats, it just lifts the Democrats' boat.
Yeah, let's go to the war in Iran, because obviously that was in some of the earlier clips. But we also asked this group of swing voters, the Biden to Trump voters, how they were feeling about Iran generally and about the news reports of the peace deal. So let's listen.
In the beginning of his term, I mean, like the stock market crossed 50,000, you know, first time ever. Things were starting to really kind of churn out a little bit. And then the war in Iran started. And I feel like the way that it was presented on the news, it was kind of like how he was trying to just get in and get out. And I think it turned into something more.
I know there was a big announcement over the weekend that pulled Trump and a bunch of people out of their plans, vacation, whatever, pulled them back to Washington. Yahoo reported they were close with the deal.
I think actually like about 45 minutes ago, they did sign like a 60-day ceasefire. But again, it's probably just stall tactics and so forth. So I don't really know what to think about it. I'll never doubt America. I'll always put my back behind our country.
I mean, you hear that they're close. How many times have we heard that? Yeah. And then yet Monday there was bombings. The description on that was like there were bombings so that, you know, the ceasefire could continue. And it's like, what in the world are you people trying to put out there to make us even try to rationalize what's going on there? My personal opinion is you cannot win this war. You know, the Hormuz, the straits are shut down. And it's like, just you have to work on getting that open, because the repercussions of that are unbelievable. What's going to happen because of that? You know, so it's like, I mean, I'm just to the point where it's like, you know, oh, we're close to a peace deal. Yep. Mm-hmm. Hear you. And how many more days are you going to give them?
All right. So in that group, part of what was funny to me is that there was a lot of different people in the group, but three of them were like pretty middle-aged white guys, like Trump's primo demographic. And they were three kind of different guys. One of them was, and he was the guy speaking last, was like so angry about how everything was going and was just kind of like throwing his hands up, being like, how insane is all of this stuff? Things are terrible. And then like the most pro-Trump person in the group was one of these guys who was like, yeah, I think things are getting better under Trump, and kind of wanted to defend him. But you could see that the other guy, I thought at some point they might start talking directly to each other, but they didn't. And then the third guy was the guy who was like, things are bad, but not for me personally. And America, like I'll always bet on American military. But what he means is if things get really bad, we can blow them up because we have a big, mighty military. And so I thought they were interesting, because the guy who was, you know, backing the military was also talking about, he's like, do presidents really make much of a difference in the lives of people? One of the things that has been wild to me, or not wild, but like, you know, Trump's losing ground everywhere, but he is also losing ground with white men. And I do think the Iran war and gas prices has a lot to do with that. What have you been seeing in the polling that you guys are doing?
I do think that's 100% right. And that Strait of Hormuz guy kind of captured it, right? Which is, again, I voted for this guy. I can't remember what reason he gave to go from Biden to Trump. I think it was overall just dissatisfaction with Biden and the way he was handling everything. And he was one of those like, well, I can't vote for Kamala Harris, so I went to Donald Trump. Right. Again, there were a lot of people in this category. He's not anti-Trump. He didn't come into this as like, I was duped. He was like, I thought things were going to get better with him. They haven't. I really fundamentally do not understand what we're doing in Iran. And I think to that point, even the one who was saying, well, I always bet on America, is basically saying, I don't know what we're doing there either. But yeah, you got to trust that at the end of the day, Trump always finds a way. Right. Like just when we think he's down or when we think there's no way this is going to work out, somehow things work out in his favor or in America's favor. So I'm still going to hold on to that. But you do wonder at what point, like what's the breaking point? So I think maybe that's what you have in that group. You had the people who from the very beginning were skeptical, continue to be skeptical, and they're just out. And you just had maybe two, if that, people who are like, I'm willing to give it just like maybe another week.
Yeah, that's right.
One more deal. Maybe this is going to work. I'm not willing to write him off yet. But this is not like support for other things that the president has done, right? That they maybe didn't 100% buy in on. I'm sure you have some of these early focus groups on tariffs where Trump voters being like, I don't know that I love this idea, but Trump's, you know, he's got a plan and he knows what he's doing. And I'm willing to hold out for a little while because it's true. We are getting ripped off.
Had a lot of those groups. Lots and lots of those
right?
groups.
Like, let's give him a little while. Let's let him work his magic, because we have such recent memory of the quagmire that has been the Middle East for U.S. Yeah. military. And because it is such a clean and clear visual to see this waterway literally blocked, and behind it are all the ships that need to go out and deliver oil. I think for most voters, this is a right. Like you don't need to understand military history or military strategy to understand why this is really hard.
I do think it's interesting because we actually cut a piece from the show that was about the weaponization slush fund. But what was crazy, again, it is crazy to us, but like I do know this about voters, only a couple people had heard about it in the groups, right? It was not a thing that they were super tuned into, but they are tuned into the war in Iran and they do understand the Strait of Hormuz. Do you know why? It's having personal consequences for them. And no matter how much corruption Trump has, and I think people should make a lot of the corruption, but you do have to attach it to people's lives because it does not naturally attach to their lives, where they see what they are losing out on because of Trump's corruption. Whereas the Strait of Hormuz was open. Now it is not. Donald Trump can't get it back open, and our gas prices keep going up, and the cost of everything's about to go up more. And people are worried that it's not, it's like not, we're not, it's not done yet. Yeah. Like it's going to get worse. There was a lot of that. Like there were the people who were like, well, you know, give him some time. Cause you're right. All of 2025 was a, people kept saying, well, do voters have buyer's remorse yet? Do they have buyer's remorse yet? Everybody, like, you know, on the news, they just wanted to hear that. No, people are super mad. And I was like, you know, they're saying things like Rome wasn't built in a day and you got to give them time and they're not happy with it. This was true. They weren't, they were kind of upset that gas prices weren't going down, but they were giving him the benefit of the doubt. And that is evaporating.
Donald Trump talked a lot about tariffs on the campaign trail, right? He talked about how important they were, and they were a critical piece of his economic plan. And so, look, I think voters were somewhat prepared for that. And I think maybe a voter in this group, I can't remember how she said it, but it's kind of like what they were saying, like, he doesn't seem to have a plan on this, right? I think that is their biggest challenge. Like, I guess on the tariffs, this has always been his thing. He talked about this on the campaign trail. I didn't really understand how it was going to impact me. Now I kind of get it. Don't know that I love it. But Iran, like, where did this come from? How did we even be, how did we get here? Why are we in this at all? And that's the thing that makes it harder to justify, even if you believe that at the end of the day, Donald Trump can make a really good deal. It is not anything they were prepared to deal with.
And I'll just add as a quick note, addendum to the gentleman who said, I think just a few minutes ago, they signed the 60-day ceasefire. That did not happen. They didn't get that. They didn't get that deal done.
They did not get that done. But his point was, you know, they'll just keep signing it and kicking the can down the road, but they're not solving it.
I want to end on something that is kind of flying under the radar as a big picture issue for folks in DC, but I hear coming up all the time in focus groups, which is these AI data centers. I know some people are paying attention to this, but it, I mean, the voters talk about it all the time. And we had an extended conversation about AI in the Biden to Trump swing voter group. And many in the group knew about fights going on about data centers near them. And I want to just play some about how they talked about it.
I'm in the middle of a huge countywide fight against data centers. People are showing up about their water already, and about 40 people are being pushed out of their homes. And it's just very personal. Like, we're in small town Georgia, and it's just devastating to see. And I think that kind of took the cake for me on whether or not I might vote. The only reason I'm going to is because maybe when I go to heaven, it'll count for something. I have no idea whether it is. But to watch the entire county say, we don't want this, and it didn't matter. I mean, it just didn't matter. It got approved not unanimously. There was like one other person that said, you know, no, but it's very corrupt. The like air pollution and water pollution that these are going to cause. And I think just being pushed out of homes, like saying like, hey, you don't have a choice, you have to move. That's so inhumane.
People are voting here in Pittsburgh in these old mill sites, and they're putting these data centers, and people are saying, we don't want them. We don't want them. We don't want the pollution. We don't want this. We don't want this anymore. But yet they just keep coming, and then there's no stopping. And then it's just like, doesn't matter who the governor is, who the mayor is, they're all on board because it's job creation. And it's just, it's not job creation. It's short term for long term pain.
Someone I went to college with was displaced by AI, and she works in IT tech as well. And she's been looking for a job for 3 years. And also, the water issue with data centers, like 70% of this country is in a state of moderate to severe drought, but yet they continually add data centers that are using tons of water. I believe in Fayetteville and Fayette County, they have a data center there that used 75 million gallons of water and were never even charged.
We're actually having one right now in our town. Everybody voted no on it. And then it turns out it came out that it was already in the process and a done deal thing. Like, the farmers had already sold their property and everything for this to start being built. So basically, yeah, like, our everybody that showed up to the city hall, it was for nothing. our word doesn't matter. I'm kind of like in the middle about it. I think it can do good things, but I think it's being abused and they're not listening to what we want. Like, we have neighboring cities that they're saying the noise is crazy and the kids are not being able to sleep and just a lot of stuff, and just we're not being heard about it. I think we had a county, it was like three counties away. They all voted no, and then the data center ended up suing them anyways, and they won the lawsuit, and so they built it anyways.
We had one in our town, and it was just a big fight, like, you know, like everybody's talking about. And, you know, they actually won, so they didn't. The people won, but the site that was identified literally just went one town up and it got approved. So it was, you know, they lost the fight to get it, but they got it anyway.
So I've been really interested in this data center fight because it is one of these local issues that I feel like national politicians aren't talking about much. Although when I was doing the 2025 races, like your Abigail Spanbergers, your Mikey Shearls, it was coming up a lot in those conversations as well. But here's what I want to ask you about it, because the through line there was like, we voted, and we got them anyway, or we didn't want this and we're still getting them. To me, this, you know, we didn't want this, but it didn't matter sentiment sort of felt like the way that local politics creates this sense in people that democracy isn't working for them.
I was just thinking that, because it actually is a good bookend to our conversation, that starting this with the conversation about these Biden to Trump voters, as these folks are pretty cynical. They're pretty frustrated that, you know, the system isn't working and that it is all rigged and all institutions are rigged, and that the local government should be the place where they feel like they can make a difference, right? Like, national politics, they're big lobbyists and they get bought off, and Washington's far from me, but this is my county. This is my community. If we just raise our voices, surely we can make a difference. Oh, we can't, right? And that is the sort of full circle piece of that. And it goes to the heart of why so many people feel so disillusioned about our politics, which is, if our community gets together and we all agree that this is bad, our local elected officials who also live in this community should at least be listening to us, and we feel like they aren't. It also is a stand-in. These data centers are clearly a stand-in for other anxieties, right? So it's a stand-in for the anxiety of, like, politics now is so far from what regular people want. It's all about what them, right, the institutions and the rich and the powerful want. But it's also about, look at AI, that woman who said, you know, I have a friend who hasn't had a job in 3 years, that it undergirds that. Here's this big, ugly building that's going to be built in the middle of our town. It's not going to hire that many people. So don't come and tell me this is like some great job creator. And the likelihood is my kid's going to get displaced from whatever job they want to have when they graduate from school. And so I do not see how, like, we are literally giving tax breaks to gajillionaires who, you know, the Googles and whatever of the world who are building these, for them to literally take our water, take our land, and then take our jobs.
I think that's right. I'm often like, hey, you got to innovate, like, AI is here, but the anxiety is about both the technology and the infrastructure, yes, right? It's both sides, yes, of it. And Adam Gentleson was on a couple of weeks ago, and he, yep, said something that like was just in these focus group, which is, this is something that people feel like is being done to them,
yes,
that they don't have any say over.
That's
both,
right,
the technology and the infrastructure. I keep noodling on what is the message that does this become a 2028 issue? I suspect it does,
yep,
actually, just as how much it's coming up.
Well, if you're a governor running in 2028,
yeah,
I mean, if you're a governor right now and you're running for president in 2028, you've probably been in some way, shape, or form this data center fight. You either approve tax breaks or whatever legislation that was going through, or you vetoed it, or maybe you didn't, but whatever it is, you've been in the middle of it. So if you are a governor, you better have a pretty good answer for why you did or didn't do something on this. But you're right. It feels like it is so much of a stand-in for the broader conversation that needs to happen. People feeling completely blindsided by AI in general, and that it's not just AI. It's that the only people benefiting are the people who are also super rich and powerful.
Yeah.
And that is a sort of deadly combination. And you're right. It felt like it happened overnight. And, you know, if you were going to build a prison in my community, I probably would have heard something about it. Right.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear anything about this till they started building it.
People do feel like it came out of nowhere and is like happening fast. I'm going to keep an eye on this one because I
think it's really smart. I do, too.
I think it's going to keep being a bigger and bigger issue. Yeah. Okay. Amy Walter, thank you so much for coming back on. Here. We will do this again soon because I'm going to keep relying on you to talk to us through all of these races. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group podcast. Please remember to go do all the things, become a Bulwark Plus subscriber, rate and review us on iTunes, go hit subscribe on YouTube, whatever you're doing, just subscribe to things. We'll see you guys next week.